Good morning. I would invite you to come as close as you can today. I have a very hard time reading a crowd, and this is more of an educational situation rather than a sanctuary situation in church. And I have a hard time reading people if they're a long way away from me. I would love it if you could come in as close as possible. Good morning. Oh, and stay there. If you have not received the two handouts, please get hold of one of those. I have part of the presentation that I am doing here, and some of it will be referring to this engagement thing where I give you an outline. And another part of it, there's a handout, and I will be showing parts of that up on the screen. I am delighted to be here this morning. My name is Ken Pitts. I'm related to your conference minister, as in she's my wife. I will be doing the Sunday school class this morning for whoever it is that shows up here. I don't know what the ages are, but it doesn't look like the small kids are here. And then she will be doing the sermon. I will also work with the children's story this morning on Active Hope. Could we bow our heads for just a moment of prayer? God, we thank you for this opportunity. We thank you for the privilege of having this conversation, and we ask that you would be in this room and that we could be here to help enact your will. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be wondering, who is this guy? Who knows? Who has seen me before? You know me? Okay, I just did not realize like how many people have actually had anything to do with me. And so I just want to show you that 3 days a week I am part of this diverse education team for the government organization, Oregon Metro. You are just outside that service region here. For Oregon Metro, I am one that does climate change presentations. I talk to about 300 classes per year of 6th grade through 12th grade. Oregon Metro also does sustainability-related things, such as recycling presentations that I do some of those. Probably about 85% of the presentations I get to do have to do with climate change. Just real quick about me. I have been with Oregon Metro for 5 years. Before that, I was way back, just kind of showing you where I got my passion. Jenna knows this. Because you recognize that place. Yeah, yes. This is where I was born and raised up until I was in fifth grade. But my direction and passions were definitely headed where they are due to being on this farm and having the opportunity to have three sections of land that I was able to just walk out onto as a kid and be gone all day, except when it came time for milking the cows. I fell in love with the land, with nature and being out there. And I could take people that would come to our farm, I could take them out to show them where every bird was, every lizard, every kind of snake, all the mammals that were there. We had prairie dogs. To me, it was just a really exciting place as a kid. And I found that I was the happiest in nature, and so that's where I really liked to spend my time. I took that then as we moved away from that farm, and I became a teacher professionally. I did this for 33 years in public schools. I taught in Kansas, Texas, Pennsylvania, and Southern California, and then for a bit at Corbett here in Oregon. I found that not only do I really like nature, but I also really like people. And when you look at the groups of students that are, that I taught, especially from Southern California, I developed a really deep passion for it's not okay with me if there are other people on earth that are hurt by what I do. And so I became very aware that, wow, there are some awesome people from every continent. And I developed relationships with those people and really respect them for that. I always tried to be the field trip teacher, the one that worked to get the grants, to get the students outside and get them in nature, because I felt in my biology teaching and also advanced placement environmental science teaching that this is where the action was at, and wanted to get them there. 3 days a week, I do presentations. The other 4 days, every moment that I can, I am out with my binoculars, my scope, my camera, and I also am a wildlife guide for Steigerwald National Wildlife Refuge. I'm a volunteer there. And so what I really enjoy is getting close, being able to see some amazing things, being able to share that. And so the pictures that you see are ones that I've taken in since this last summer. I just find things, I find nature amazing. I just find it amazing that this little bird that's about like that has so much testosterone and is so aggressive, and if it wants to, it's almost like it could set its head on fire to say, hey, get out of my territory. I like getting close. I like being able to find them doing interesting and amazing things. I do spend a lot of time with that, and maybe too much money too, and my wife can probably attest to all that. Kind of at the, along with the tops of my concerns and passions, I have two grandchildren. This is May, and she just turned 3. This is a little bit of an old picture. And this is Noelia, or Noelle, and she just turned 1 right before Christmas. That's the name. When I looked into her eyes, and when I look into the many young people's eyes that I present to and talk about climate change, I have the same, just this deep longing of, wow, I would really like it if these things could be here for them when they're my age. And that drives me to get out of bed and prepare and do what I need to do to go bigger than myself when it comes to taking action with climate change and making others, helping others to be aware and start conversations, which is what brings me here today. So I'd like to kind of stick with this outline, and as I said, some of the presentation, there's a whole lot more in this Prezi up here, this presentation, than what I'm going to work with you today. I have taken some of what I do with Oregon Metro and the visuals that are there, and then also added to it, took the Oregon Metro logo off. And so what this does is it gives me the ability to, when it comes question time, take you wherever we need to actually see visuals of that. My understanding is that we have until about a quarter after, and so, excuse me, I would like by a quarter after today to open it up for questions and have 10 to 15 minutes at the end. If you have questions and if you have something that you want to do, be sure you write that down. I just know that often when I only have 45 minutes or so, that it feels really compressed, and we don't get to all the things that I feel like we need to. I'll start with the breakdown on this and talk a little bit about the science. I taught science for, as I said, 33 years. Had my students involved always with the Kansas Junior, or with the Junior Academy of Science and science projects. And I really enjoyed involving my students for all those years in the process of science. And I built within me a lot of respect for that process. I know that the process isn't perfect, but I also know that it's one of the best processes that there is for determining what is reality. And so if we look at how good is the science when it comes for climate change, scientists are at consensus. Atmospheric scientists, climate scientists, glaciologists are at consensus on this. Now, when you see this 97% consensus, it just means that 97% of the studies show that connection of man is causing climate change. We know that the climate is changing, and 97% of them show that connection. But sometimes it's confusing. Well, what are the other three? There are about 2.3% of those studies that don't show a connection. But they don't show that there isn't a connection. It's just that they were studying something that was, it didn't show a connection. And then there's about 0.7 or whatever is left that scientists will go out for companies and they will find a place to study, like a glacier in eastern Antarctica that is gaining ice, and then say, and cherry pick that and say, hey, this is evidence that climate change isn't happening, but ignore all of the other studies. And so essentially, science is at consensus on this. And so stepping outside of that is a really bold step in saying that something else is so. Just real quick about the science, I'm going to channel my best Al Gore here. As I use some of the slides, this is the atmosphere that surrounds the Earth, and our view of the atmosphere when we step outside is that it looks like it's limitless, but it just goes on forever. But when you look at it from outer space, when you look at it from the space station, you get more of the idea of there is a fixed volume there. Into that, we're pouring 110 million tons of climate-changing pollution, that are gases that have carbon in them. Every 24 hours, 110 million times 2,000 pounds. What's supposed to happen is the sun's rays come through and heat the Earth. You may have experienced that on the day where you go out and try to walk across asphalt with your bare feet on a sunny day. That happens, but most importantly, I think, is that some of the radiation, some of the heat is turned back by greenhouse gases. Having the right amount of greenhouse gases, therefore, is really important. If you took all the CO2 out of the atmosphere, and we're at 412 parts per million now, if we were to take that out of the atmosphere, we would freeze, the oceans would freeze all the way to the equators from the poles, even if you took it down, way down from where it is. But if you put too much in there, like what we have now, it's a little bit like putting that extra blanket on at night, and you use the down blanket, and you were cold before, and now you're pulling that up, and it gets too hot. So just very quickly, scientists now know, and it's the best news that they can give you, the best news that I can give you, is that we know what is causing climate change. We're burning fossil fuels. We're adding the carbon dioxide. We're adding that carbon to the atmosphere. And these are things that, as we look at this, we probably get kind of a lump in our throat as to what we need to do. I'll look at the timetable on this, but we have a lot to do over the next several decades. to be able to solve climate change before it becomes unsolvable. Think of the things that you participate in this photo. We participate in getting here, all the stuff that gets to us. How many have been on an airplane in the last 2 years? Anybody traveled? Yeah. There is, I think I just turned that off. Boy, hold on just a second here. There we go. Bring it back. Anyway, long story short, we have a lot to do because we are currently powering most of our society with fossil fuels. All of a sudden, I've touched something and it's not working for me. We're good. All right. So as that carbon dioxide level goes up, so does the temperature. Just yesterday, we got the latest about where the average temperature of the Earth is now. The zero line would indicate the average from here to 1980 is what they looked at as, well, what should the average temperature of the Earth be? Because we're looking at, what are we doing in comparison to that average? And if you look at these, this is 2018, this is 2017, 16, 15, and 14. And we got the news yesterday that we tied, basically. It's actually 0.04 degrees centigrade less than the record. So we're right there, and that's too far away, and I'm too shaky to hold it. But we basically are back to that high point for the tie for that record. It's the second highest ever. The last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years have been the hottest years since we've been recording temperature. It's a lot of concern that goes along with that. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time, much more time with looking at this because I want to get to solutions. I just want everybody to know it's important to me. It's important to us to know the truth, and the science behind this is amazing. Scientists are the ones that actually test it, and other people make it up according to what it is that fits their needs, and usually that is what is financially best for them or expedient for their company. Scientists step out of their way. Some of the best science and most important science has to do with ice cores. As they go, when you go to Antarctica, the ice in places is as much as 2.5 miles deep. And as you drill down through there, the ice has bubbles in it. And the bubbles in that ice can be popped and carbon dioxide measured directly. We end up then with a lot of data. And you'll notice this is 800,000 years. And this is now. And this is carbon dioxide. This is temperature. And some of the most incredible science I think that there is that from those bubbles, they are able to tell by the isotopes present in those bubbles, they are able to tell the age of the bubble, and they're able to tell also the average temperature of the Earth for that time period. And so as you look at this and you see this almost perfect correlation of every time CO2 goes up, what happens to temperature? You can say it out loud. And every time CO2 goes down, temperature goes down. And it has done that. And from this type of data, we are seeing that it is the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that determines the temperature of the Earth. Let me look and see where we're at here. So I want to talk just a little bit about impacts. And There's other good news other than scientists have found out what it is that's causing it. It's us, and we can do something about it. The other good news is you live in the Northwest. And so when I point at that picture there, all of those places are within 2 hours of here. We have this amazing place in nature. And when it comes to where we're at in the United States, you live in the very best place to be for the lifetime of the kids that are here. This is the place to be because we don't have the hurricanes. We have averaged 1 day over 100 over the past 100 years. We've averaged 1 day over 100. We're going to go to about 10 days over 100 this century. If you remember 2015, that's where that will become the norm as we go forward. But the rest of the United States, like here in Texas in the middle, they average about 10 days over 100, and they will be moving to 40 to 50 days over 100. And when I talk about climate change being a game changer, that does change the game for a lot of things, including agriculture and just people's lives. I was a biker when we lived in Kansas, and I wanted to be out biking get the cool of the day. But when you have day after day after day, over 100, wow, that window gets narrower and narrower. And so maybe one of the biggest problems that we will see in the Northwest is just the masses of people that are wanting to get away from the worst ravages of climate change, whether it be moving away from the Gulf, from the hurricanes, moving away from the storms here, moving away from the heat, moving away from places that lack water. That will put a pressure on the Northwest. I don't know about the population, or other than the metro area. I know that we have 1.6 million people, and that's expected to double or triple in this century, as Oregon and Washington have become the number one and two states to move to, even now as changes take place. Are there other climate impacts that you're concerned about? You can just say what it is, and then we could talk a bit about that. Yes, thank you.
Climate impacts?
Yes. Could you give me one to work with?
The forest fires seem to be raging more than they've ever had.
Yeah.
Are raging
more than can I stop you at the forest fires?
Right.
Yeah. The forest fires are a big deal. And in this area here, in the Cascades, in the coastal range, we're expecting six times more for that to increase, six times the frequency of what it's been in the past. In the ranges further on into the Rocky Mountains, and I don't know if I have the direction right on that or not, they're expecting 60 times the amount of fires. And when you talk to the firefighters in Australia and you talk to the firefighters in California, they will tell you it is different. It is different now. That lower humidity, stronger winds has made a huge difference.
And what percentage then of the increase is attributed to that? You get cars and industry and that. But those two other items, what percentage of that?
That's a good question. It's the increase in CO2. It's the increase, the changing of the climate because of that, that is expected to have an increase there. Is there another impact besides forest fires? Yes.
About
what?
Freon.
Freon?
Yeah.
Yeah, and can I come back to that when we get to drawdown? Because I want, you'll see that happens to be number one on the list. And so I heard somebody here say water. Who said water? You said water. Yes. In a recent book, I don't have that in front of me and I've lost the name of it. It's like The Uninhabitable Earth. The author says that if climate change is a shark, that fresh water will be the teeth. because that is something you have to have on a daily basis. And the changes that are happening with our hydrological system, that will really come fast, and communities are just not prepared for it. It's actually easier to get food to places in time. You don't have to have that quite as soon as you need water. And when this water supply shuts off or when the infrastructure is broken, and also it's just fresh water, we're going to find here that that farmers will have a harder time with trying to get water. If you depend on the water from the Cascades, because that amount of snow will become less and less over the years. And so that becomes a real problem for the farming community. Was there somebody else that had a different impact? You're sitting far away. Yes?
Agriculture, uh-huh. Especially in the tropics.
Yeah. Yeah, and climate change, with the predictions on weather, when it or temperatures in the future, this century, are daunting when we look at, well, if we just do whatever we're doing, let's just keep on doing it. Northern Africa, like all this area right here, they are predicting that 750 million people will live in a place where they will average 200 days a year over 114 by the end of this century. That's 200 days a year over 114. And, you know, there's just this huge swath there. And they're saying that India will be the most impacted country when it comes economically, and the people that are there, they will be devastated by this. The second country most devastated will be the United States when it comes to economic impact. But places in the tropics, Central America, this area will become increasingly worse when it comes to being able to grow food. We're already seeing that in Honduras. We are seeing it in the Middle East with Syria. They had 4 years of drought before they had the conflict that was there. Those are related things.
I've said for many years that the biggest waste of water in the United States that I see anywhere, and a lot of people don't like this, I still believe is golf courses.
Yeah.
You can drive down any desert road you want and you come to the golf course. The whole thing is green with water.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I'm not here to solve every last problem. We have a host of conversations that need to happen, and they need to happen beyond this sanctuary and with people that are in charge. I would like to just look at one more thing. Oops, I'm having a hard time touching this right. There we go. There's a time limit to this. Scientists are telling us, and again, scientists are the only ones that are testing this. If we look at what is our window here, what are some goals that we need to set? And basically, we have a decade. They told us a little over a year ago in the IPCC report that we had 10 to 12 years to get a 45% reduction in greenhouse gases. That's a 45% reduction in burning of fossil fuels, or adding to that, we're needing to pull a lot more carbon in so that we have a 45% reduction, however that might take place. But we need that by around 2030, or we don't get to solve climate change, because when the Arctic heats up, all of these, the permafrost melts, and then it doubles the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. And then it's out of our control. And so we have about a decade to have some control here. That's really heavy. That is really heavy. And I wish that weren't true. But I also hope that we find a way to respond. And so What I'd like to do is to just show you one other thing. We have a system. Can you read those things? Raise your hand if you can see and read that. I just want to know. All right. When we look at this system, these things, there is a relationship between these. Would you take a moment and just with the people around you, somebody near you, would you talk about some relationships? Like you could draw lines in between these and say, oh yeah, this is related to that, and so on. Could you take a moment and do that with somebody around you? Give you a minute to look at those relationships, and I'm just going to switch over to one that I can sketch on. Actually, I'll put that back because you can see that better. Feeling the pressure of time, I'm going to bring you back. And I'd like to hear from somebody I haven't heard from yet about maybe a relationship or two that you saw, just real briefly. Keep it quick on this if we could. But what relationship do you see? What do you see that we could draw a line to? And I'll just take my finger and draw a line. Anybody have an example relationship that you'd be willing to share with us? Yes. What is it connected to? What is it connected to?
Transportation.
Yeah. And transportation is connected to? Fossil fuels. And fossil fuels come from nature. Anything else on that?
Sure. It takes up the landfill when you decide you don't need it, it's thrown away.
Okay, so we do online shopping, which might give us more stuff than we need, right? Or our stuff doesn't last because it's just so easy to replace, and so our stuff ends up in the landfill, all right? So tell me about the packaging from it. Yes, of course. Let's see. What about we don't know the people who buy our we buy from. We don't know the people who make our stuff. Where does that attach? Yeah, it could be transportation. We have to drive to go to places. What are the things there that increase the chances that we don't know the people?
Online shopping.
Online shopping, right. Shopping centers. You buy the stuff, but you don't really have a relationship with those people most of the time. There could be some exceptions to this. Any there that, yes?
Well, before any of this starts, it's the advertising and consumer
culture. Right. So, and they want to bring us in. It doesn't cost very much, and so they'll bring you in to buy that. Therefore, we have more stuff than we did 100 years ago, and we also buy stuff that we don't need. Yes, and so I do this activity with 6th grade through 12th grade, and we got a rich conversation out of it as groups come up and show us their connections. But we ask them to put a star on the sheet that we have. This is the one that matters. This is the one that has to be there. This is our source of everything, our natural resources. The one thing on here that has to change big time in the next 10 years is what? Our reliance on? Yeah, so if we were to cross that out and then put renewables in there, moving toward other forms of energy, we probably are not going to be able to make our capitalistic system go like it is today on fossil fuels, or without fossil fuels. We're going to need to change things. And so another activity that I do with the 6th grade through 12th is we look at the product life cycles. And if you have all of our stuff coming in this stream to you, to us, as we stand in the stream of stuff, this is upstream from us, and this is downstream from us. So it is extracted, it is refined, it's made, it's shipped, and we get it, and we use it, and we use it, and we use it, and we use it, and I'm tired of it, and we throw it away. I'd like to ask you the question. Where do you think the most environmental damage takes place? And your choices are upstream or downstream. So upstream or downstream. Where does the most environmental damage take place? How many believe it's upstream? How many believe it's downstream? And we have a lot of people that aren't sure, and that's okay. The majority of Americans believe it's downstream. And it has to do, we have been taught, we have been brainwashed that being green and being environmentally friendly has to do with whether you recycle or not, with where you put your trash, how clean you are. And when we do this activity in schools, we actually take data on the videos as it comes through, and we watch a T-shirt as it starts in Wisconsin and goes to Mississippi as a genetically engineered seed, then it goes 18,000 miles to Bangladesh, and then it goes through all sets of processes. And the students are able to count up at least 80 sources of carbon upstream, and then downstream, we count about 6 or 7. And so when we talk about environmental damage, don't lose sight of the problem. It's not plastics. It's not a whole lot of these other things that are distractors. For the next 10 years, it's carbon dioxide. It's fossil fuels. And the most environmental damage by far comes from upstream. So I'd like to go to this next thing on your, let's go to letter C where it says three movements. And there's a handout that goes with that. And I came up with this as I was a part of the Peace and Justice Committee for Portland Mennonite Church. And we have decided that for several years we will focus on climate change and what our response is to it. And so I would like, would you just take a moment and stand up? There you go. Stand up. And if you can see me, that would be great. I'd like to show you three motions that help us to look at our three responses. As people of Christ, as we need to first look at ourselves. And if you want to do that with me to help you remember it, we need to look at ourselves and we need to say, how can I, how can my family, how can we as a congregation, how can we as a conference reduce our carbon? You can do it and we can do it perfectly. We're still going to go over the edge in 10 years unless you do the second part and we do it in mass. And that is reach out and get other people to do something. Start having conversations and we'll look at, you got to go bigger than yourself because you can do it quietly. This is something that Mennonites like to do. They like to do it quietly. We need to go bigger than ourselves. And then the other thing, that which is right at the heart of our faith, is that we also need to reach back and realize there are already people devastated by climate change and give them a hand. And be aware of that and be thinking, what can I do to help those that are already devastated? So thank you. I want to just, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this part of it because it's on your handout. And so if you have that green sheet, and if you go, it has the three movements here, and then mine's upside down, but yours isn't. For the reach in part, some of the suggestions that I have put on there, when we look at what takes a lot of carbon, our houses do, as we heat our houses. And so I don't know what your options are here. Do you have PG&E also? Yeah. Do you have the renewable energy option? Yeah, so you can. If you haven't done that, you can make that zero by purchasing renewable option. They're required and they're audited to have that much renewable energy to supply for you. The bigger that is, the quicker it goes, they move to renewables. I realized I left out an important part. And this is feeling like, I don't have my time. I think of all the ones that are on here that are really interesting to me and were kind of a surprise, is the last one here about buying carbon offsets. Our family lives in Kansas and California and in Illinois. And we need to travel. And by car is actually the worst. By plane, if we need to do that, buying carbon offsets for a 1,000-mile round trip, it takes about $10 more to put that much carbon into the ground. And so as we do this, where we transition away from carbon, one of the things that we can do is to try to make sure that we acknowledge that, and if we can, pay for offsets on that. I am going to slide back because I feel like I just left out an important thing. When you look at a project called Drawdown, when they look at using 80 to 100 solutions for drawing down the carbon, and scientists are looking at, well, what can actually work, and putting numbers to that. The goal is, if you'll notice that the y-axis here is carbon. The y-axis, that's the vertical one, is carbon dioxide parts per million. And then over time, to bring that down, again, we are up above where we should be on that. Can you see that arrow? Yeah. This is actually, this should be up at 412 now. It should actually be higher. But bring that back down by putting all of the things that we have into effect at a reasonable level worldwide. And when we look at those solutions, and you can't see those, you're not supposed to, I just wanted to show you there was a list of 80. If you go down to drawdown.org, you can actually look at that and you can see what it is that works. And I want to come back to who was it that said something about refrigerant. There you are. Right at the very top, coolant and refrigeration refrigerators and air conditioners, all that coolant, it becomes a gas if it escapes. And it's 1,000 to 10,000 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. And so that's a big deal. Probably not much you can do about this right now other than don't go home and beat up your refrigerator. And there may be people in here that own land that you could put wind turbines on, but for the most part, you're going to really not make your neighbors happy by doing that. And so those wouldn't be things that you participate in. But when we look at all of the different solutions, right up at the very top is that refrigerant management is number one. You'll notice like 89.74 billion tons of carbon equivalents if we manage that worldwide. But if I were to just put up here 8 solutions and then say, now here are some that you might be able to participate in. Just take a few seconds here and talk to somebody beside you about which one do you think, which ones would be in the top 3. What do you think? These are just random solutions. All of them are in the top 55. Did anybody feel really confident about your top one, two, or three? Anybody want to share what your top? What do you have?
I have a plant-rich diet.
Plant-rich diet, okay.
Saving water and educating women.
All right. Is there somebody that had a different three? Yes.
I have a recycling at home.
Recycling at home. And I got educating girls, and I also heard over here reducing food waste. So, in the sake of time, I'll show you your top ones. Reducing food waste is number one. Of all the food that we produce in the United States that could go in people's mouths, we throw 40% of it in the trash. 40%. And in the United States, for every 5 bags of groceries we buy, we throw one away. We waste 40% of our land. We waste 40% of the fossil fuels. The average distance a vegetable travels to your house is 1,500 miles. We waste 40% of that. The second one is eating a plant-rich diet, and that's a huge one, and it's got to do with the inefficiency of feeding the animals and the amount of land that it takes to do that. As we have a growing population, it doesn't work out well. Girls getting an education, again, this is worldwide. We find that when girls are educated, they do really well with number one and two, top two worldwide. They work a lot with that. But also, as education goes up, TFR, which is the number of children they will have, goes down. That is a correlation that can help with climate change. And I'll just put the others up here. And I want to point out something here. Remember what America believes is the way to be green. When it comes to climate change, look at the pink. When we look at those 8 solutions as to how big an impact they have when it comes to carbon dioxide worldwide, look at the food ones versus the recycling ones. Recycling is basically 1.2%. It doesn't mean it's not important. It's number 55 on the list. So, yeah, let me do the last thing for me, basically, is we need to go bigger than ourselves. I'll give you an example of somebody that goes bigger. And this is Xavier Cortada. He lives in Florida. And Xavier has a way of talking to people. Xavier doesn't want to go out and talk to middle school students and high school students like I do 3 days a week. What he is an artist. He was a doodler when he was that age. And he goes to people's house, he takes a laptop, and he says, "Hey, I've got Google Earth up. Would you like to know how far your house is above sea level?" Yeah. Fine. Oh, 8 feet. And when you consider that scientists are telling us the latest numbers are, and these may be low, the sea level rise of century will be somewhere between here and here. That's a really big deal. That number, just last week, glaciologists came out and said, you know what, the glaciers are actually melting 7 times faster than we thought. So what was a best case scenario, now what was a worst case scenario may actually be a best case scenario. And when you look at that, there's a lot of change that needs to take place. This guy, yeah, as you can imagine, gets a lot of conversation started in Florida. I have listed on that sheet things to do, and I think I'm going to just let you read that, what those 3 movements are. And I want to end with, I'm going to zoom quickly over stuff here to get to this part. It's a really awful looking picture. But as we consider climate change, there are some interesting things that happen when we look at the behavior of humans. If you take a person, and they did this in the 60s, if you take a person and you set them in the room and you give them something important to do, like fill out a form for a study that they think they're going to be a part of and it's really important, you set them in that room, then you let smoke start coming under a door into that room, that person, within the first minute, jumps up and goes and gets help to try to see what's wrong. They are concerned. If you take the same room and you put some people in it that have been told, don't react, that are part of this study, that same person will sit there and look up and wonder 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later, and they need to come in and rescue them. And so when I have on here cherish truth, oh, right above that, where it says on the D, down on the little C, beware of doubt manufacturers. Doubt manufacturers are ones that pay people to sit in the room. We are sitting in the room now. People have been paid billions of dollars to not be concerned. With sound bites from energy companies. And so if you want help in for the crowd effect, you need to stand up or you need to point to one person and say, will you help me? Versus maybe to everybody. You need to get somebody resonating with you to and act versus sit and wait for something to happen. Because we have been told, and it would be great if we could counteract that effect. So I would have loved to have shown you what MCC is doing, Mennonite Disaster Service, things that we can support as part of the reaching back. But I would also like to give you some time for some questions here. Yes, question.
Would you explain what carbon offset agrees with?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so there's been a lot of doubt put out there about carbon offsets. An example of there are a lot of different ways to offset carbon. And so if I take that 1,000-mile trip in the airplane, a certain amount of carbon dioxide comes out. If I pay for carbon offsets for that, that might be paying for somebody who can't afford it to put insulation in their home that would then prevent that amount of carbon that I used from being spent for the heating of that home. It might be a place where a farmer has been subsidized to take his herd of cattle or her herd of cattle and to now treat them more like buffalo on their land and allow them to be in a place, raise it intensively, but move on and keep them moving as that land now becomes an amazing storehouse for carbon in the soil as those plants thrive. It could be that it replaces fossil fuels with natural gas coming from carbon digesters or from waste methane digesters. And so it may support infrastructure like at there's a Roosevelt landfill, for instance, in Washington that now sequesters all the methane that comes off of that and has enough of it for 900 trucks a day to power. And so there just are all of these projects that in some way reduce carbon dioxide, pull carbon in, or replace fossil fuels. Yeah, good question. Yes, thank you. There's a lot of opposition. I don't know where to go with that. The prime opposer are the people that make money off of fossil fuels. And so if that's what you're asking, I mean, that's where the funding is coming from.
And they're collaborators.
And they're collaborators, right. And those collaborators are also benefiting from that relationship with the fossil fuel companies. We were looking yesterday, when I showed you that 97% research, you can find videos talking about that being a myth. You can find that on YouTube. But when you look at who made that video, Friends of Science. Oh, that sounds scientific. But then when you go back and you look, well, where did that come from? Being paid for by fossil fuel companies. And so there's a lot of energy that goes into confusing people. There was a question over here. Yes?
If I lower my use of fossil fuel, mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to go back to if you're lowering and we're lowering fossil fuels, we're taking care of what we need to do and how we need to roll as people understanding that there's a problem. And if we say, you know, we want others to do it, we want legislation to be had, we want to support things that are going to get systems to do this. But there are some things that are out of our control. But at the same time, how do we need to roll? Do we want to just say, I give up? Let it happen?
As a thinker, I am somewhat skeptical of easy answers.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes available to more people. It seems to me that we have two options, maybe more, but yeah. Two big options. One is to make fossil fuels artificially more expensive.
We make them artificially less expensive now. Our government subsidizes oil companies by billions and billions of dollars every year to make them less expensive for us. And so, Parsha, remove that to playing field where now renewables are less expensive. And they reached that just a year ago, where wind and solar are now cheaper to produce electricity. And that's a really big deal. Yeah, and I also want to just add to that, if you wonder what it is that scientists are doing, there are no scientists out there that are working on whether climate change is happening. When I go to MIT's website and they look at their climate symposium, they're looking at the options, they're looking for the cheaper ways to do things to where it becomes easy to do this. There was a question over here. That's really complicated, isn't it? And the most powerful thing you can do, I have on three movement response, reaching back, and the number four one there, it says, use your dollars to buy local, use your dollars to find, support responsible companies, ones that are socially responsible, and try to move away from the ones that are, the dollar is the most, your dollar and your vote are the most powerful things that you can do when it comes to changing companies. But we are at the end of our time, and... We did figure it out, but that got buried. That got buried. And we needed to come back up, and those are conversations where we need to demand that those come up. Only 2% of cars right now are electric cars. I drive one for when I work for Metro. It's a Bolt. It has a 250-mile range. And car companies have been okay with that. They
it's not an electric car.
Right.
It's something you water
and make
hydrogen.
Yep.
I don't know how.
Yeah. Yeah. I think China brought on 250,000 electric buses, but when you have the hydrogen, it has to be separated in that, and so that, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Somebody can do that again.
Yep. Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to further conversations. Thank you.